This morning, as we're getting started, I wanted to start with a story that I had heard. There was about this guy, and he slides over the edge of this cliff, and he's just about to fall, and he grabs onto some plants, and he's able to hang on. Of course, he's dangling hundreds of feet above the ground, and he's in this horrible situation. He's not got the strength to pull himself back up, and so he's stuck, and so he just calls out, kind of hopelessly, for someone to help. Somebody, please, help me! And a voice from the sky answers and says, "Do you believe that I can help you?" And he says, yeah, I believe. Please help me, right? Do you believe that I love you enough to help you? Yes, I believe. Just help me, please. Do you believe that I have the power to help you? Yes, I believe. Then because you believe, I will help you. Now, let go. And there was a short pause, and the man says, "Is there anybody else up there?" thanks for humoring me with my good old preacher joke, okay? If you don't mind, I'm going to start by asking a couple of questions that are going to help guide us into our discussion. Do you believe that faith is a powerful thing?
Yes.
Okay, I do too. What makes faith powerful? That one's harder, right? Because we believe it's powerful, but what is it about faith that makes faith powerful? Is it the amount of faith? Or is it something different? It's a good question, isn't it? Ultimately, here's the one that I think kind of stands out above them all. Do you want great faith? Okay, come on, wake on up here. Do you want great faith? Okay, me too, right? And that's a good thing. Some people are like, I don't know, I think it's kind of prideful to say, no. Hopefully, you should want to be great, you know, because faith is all about someone else. It's not about yourself. It's not a selfish thing. It's completely opposite. It's one of the most humble things that you can say. I want great faith, right? And so we want it, but here's the question. What makes faith great? Because that's what we want. So how do we get it? What makes faith great? And what are the steps I need to take to get there? So we're going to be taking a closer look over at faith over the next few weeks. We're going to start this new series, and here's what I've titled it, Flawed Heroes of Faith. And we're going to study through Hebrews chapter 11. And in Hebrews chapter 11, one of the most powerful chapters in all of the Bible, at least for this week. I might change later, right? But one of my favorite and one of the most powerful is Hebrews chapter 11. And Hebrews 11 is this list. And it's a list of heroes. And God is the one who has written this list. And by the way, as we start this series, can I just say on a side note, when you read the list, there's a lot of people on the list that if we were writing the list, wouldn't have made the list. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of people that are mentioned here, and they're celebrated for their great faith. And we kind of go, wait, what? How did a prostitute make the list? A murderer made the list. A liar made the list. But God's the one who wrote the list. And by the way, no matter who you are, if they can make the list, then you can make the list too. That's what the Hebrew writer is trying to get these people and us today to understand. If they could make the list, we can make it too. What made them great was not their perfection. What made them great was their great faith. And the same thing will make you great too. So the question for this morning is, what makes faith great? Because I want great faith. How about you? So here we are as we enter. So instead of jumping right into the list, we'll start looking at some. We will not look at all. We will look at some of the heroes of faith. And by the way, that's why I've titled the series Flawed Heroes of Faith, because we've got some flawed heroes that made the list. Aren't you thankful that we've got some flawed heroes that made the list? And so that's what we're going to look at. But this morning, what I want us to do is I want us to just talk about the concept of faith. I want us to talk about this whole faith thing, because it's not going to help us very much to look at others' example of faith until we understand faith first. So that's what we're going to look at this morning. Now, most of you probably know what faith is. Some of you might not have ever really thought through what faith is or how it works, right? Maybe you're brand new to this whole church thing. Maybe you're sitting here in the pews or you're watching online and you're new to this. So whether you're new or not, if you're new, this whole concept's going to be new. And even if you've lived by faith and walked by faith for a very long time, I still think you're going to benefit from this because you were very slow to answer some of those earlier questions about faith. There's still more for us to dig down. Amen? We can always learn more, and that's what we're going to do this morning. So let's start with a little bit of context. I want you to open up your Bibles to Hebrews, but we're not going to jump right into chapter 11. I want us to start in chapter 10 as we are on our way into chapter 11. So we'll go to Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 35. Now, while you're turning there, let me ask you another question. Have you ever played a game called Jenga? Yeah. I don't like that game. Just got to be honest with you. And when I was in youth ministry, I had to play this game a lot. All right. So for you Jenga fans out there, sorry. Okay. I will play it. But I will not enjoy it. Okay. And here's why. The way this game works, in case you don't know, I don't know how you wouldn't know of Jenga. But if you didn't know, Jenga is where you stack a bunch of blocks up into this tower. And then what you do is you carefully remove a block from the tower. And the key to the game is not only do you remove the block from the tower, but then you have to take the block you've removed and place it on top of the tower. Now, when the game starts, it's all calm. It's all fun. I don't mind the start of Jenga. But the longer that Jenga goes, the more my fear and anxiety begins to rise. And that's what I don't like about the game, is the fear factor that comes with it, right? Because the longer the game goes, the taller the top of the tower gets and the more unstable the bottom of the tower gets. And you know, at some point, everything's coming down, right? Now, here is also why I don't like Jenga. Why does it seem like all the Jenga games are just getting bigger and bigger and bigger? I mean, kids are playing with bricks. You know what I'm saying? Like, it feels like if some of these towers fall on you, you're going to have to go to the hospital, get some ligaments reattached. You know what I'm saying? And so, have you seen? I'm not kidding. Like, some of these yard-sized games of Jenga, some of you own them, you bunch of sinners. Sending your kids to a hospital. Right? But soon the tower gets so big and it gets so unstable, I feel like I can't even sneeze in its general direction or else it's all going to come down, right? But here's the deal. Sometimes life can be like Jenga. You know what I'm saying? Life just, one thing happens and it's not so bad. You know, I place that thing there and it's all going to be okay. But life has a way of throwing punch after punch after punch after punch. And it doesn't matter how bad one of the punches were, all of them added together, you can start to feel like the foundation's getting a little wobbly. And that soon, if one more thing is placed on top, because you hit that point in Jenga, right? You get that place where you go, okay, the next person, it's done, right? This thing's, have you ever been there? In your life, some of you are there right now, right? And you're going, oh, I know what you're talking about, Nathan, because I was feeling that this morning, right? If one more thing is out of line, the whole tower's coming down. I didn't feel that this morning, but my son did, right? We had what I have now labeled the jelly bean debacle this morning, right? Jude found a small little box of jelly beans, and I don't know where he found them, okay? These were from Christmas. I don't know how they didn't stay in the stocking. And by the way, he came out of my bathroom with them. That was weird. When you have a toddler, you start to learn. I'm beginning to learn. Things have found new homes. And so he comes walking out of the bathroom holding this box of jelly beans, and he's already got one in his mouth. And so now the trouble begins. He hasn't had breakfast yet. We don't want him to have these jelly beans. We would like him to have something a little bit healthier and more substantial for breakfast, okay? And so, you know, I might not be the perfect parent, but I do think jelly beans aren't the right choice. And so it's time to take the jelly beans from Jude. And he loses his mind as I'm attempting to take them away. Now, here's the problem. He's lost his mind while he's still holding them. And so you know that where it begins, it's only going to escalate once the jelly beans are gone. You know what I'm saying? And so there's still more to go, and it started up here. And so we were through the roof over the jelly beans this morning. We had a nice old family meltdown standing outside our bathroom, and Jude's now on the floor. He's throwing a fit, and I'm like, son, it's you know, if you're angry, it's okay that you're angry, but you cannot throw this kind of a fit while you're angry. You got, you know, we're trying to have these teaching moments, and I think he's like getting 20% of what I'm saying, but probably 10% because he can't hear anything over his own escalation. And so it was just one of those things. But then he kind of calms down. Mom comes in. She does the whole mom thing, and all of a sudden, it's somehow better, and Dad just wasn't doing it right. And so they make their way to the kitchen, and now it begins breakfast, and everything's okay, but he's still kind of, you know, jelly bean, jelly bean, jelly bean. And so now, anytime a fork isn't just right, or my bib's a little too tight, or I dropped a piece of food on the floor, you know what happens? Boom! We're back at it again. World War III. Here we go. Like, Jude's up at the top. And so everything that happened, the tower was coming down this morning. And I still made it to church on time. Yeah. God is real. He is alive and he is good. Here's the deal. Sometimes life feels that way. And my son, even as a kid, we feel that way on certain days. Your age doesn't exempt you. And so kiddos, you've probably felt this too. Like, man, if one more thing goes wrong, I feel like I can't take another punch. And so I tell you all this because as we enter into this book of Hebrews, we haven't been studying through the entire book. We're jumping into chapter 11. So I felt the need to give you a little bit of context. That is what these people that the Hebrew writer is talking to, that's what they're experiencing. Their tower is close to coming down, right? The blocks are high. The foundation is wobbling, and these people are hurting. They're tired and they're beaten down from the constant anxiety and stress of the persecution that they're facing, and they can't find the relief that they're searching for. And these people are tempted to do what my coach in football used to tell us to do. Don't throw in the towel, right? It's the idea, don't quit, don't give up, don't throw in the towel. And he's trying to tell them, keep going, don't give up, because these people are suffering. And so he's encouraging them to hold on just a little while longer. And that's my message for you this morning. If you're sitting there and you're feeling like, I can't take anymore, my encouragement is hold on just a little while longer, because God is working in your life. And so the Hebrew writer says, faith is the answer. Faith is the key to holding on. Faith is what's going to keep your tower from falling. And so that is a bold claim from this writer, because if he's wrong, who gets the blame for the entire tower of my life come crashing down? I did what you said. I mean, wouldn't you blame him? And so this is a bold claim. And so that's why in the book of Hebrews, we spend so much time talking about this thing called faith. And this is where we step in now to our scene in chapter 10. Look with me in verse 35 as we begin this series. He says, so do not throw away your confidence. He literally uses the same language, right? Don't throw in the towel. But don't throw any, what's the towel? He labels the towel. Don't throw in your confidence. What's another word for confidence? Faith. Don't throw in your faith, because it, what? Your confidence, your faith, will be richly rewarded. So this faith thing is really important, and God's going to reward this faith. And he says, you need to persevere, keep going, so that when you have done the will of God, which is to have faith, by the way, spoiler alert, you will receive what he has promised. In other words, there are some promises that God has given to you and to me this morning, but those promises are going to lie dormant until we're able to access the kind of faith that God is wanting us to access. And so there's some promises, there's some power that hasn't been unlocked yet because God is looking at your faith. And if he just gives you the promise before you've had the faith, then what good was it for you? Because your faith will never grow. And so he says, you will receive what he's promised. Verse 37, for in just a little while, he who is coming, he will come and he will not delay. But my righteous one will live by faith. And if he shrinks back, I won't be pleased with him. But we are not of those who shrink back and are destroyed, but we are those who believe and are saved. He says, not us. We're not going to shrink back. The tower's not going to be, I love the language, it's not going to be destroyed, right? We're going to hold on even when it hurts most because we know God has some promises for us and he's just waiting on our faith. To grow to what point? That's between the Lord and the Lord. But he's waiting on your faith. So here's the main takeaway from this verse, though. There's so much good there, but we've got to move into our text, which is in Hebrews 11. But here's the one takeaway I want you to get above all from this section. He says, the righteous will live. There we go. The righteous will live by faith. In other words, faith is not meant to be something that you can just switch on and off. Okay? Faith is not meant to be, I'm going to trust God in these things, but you know what? This is too big and the consequences are too great and the risk is too much because faith involves risk, right? Faith naturally implies that something is risked. And when the risk gets too great, God, I'm taking matters into my own hands right now. I'm going to trust the world. I'm going to trust self-help books. I'm going to trust preachers, but I'm not going to trust in you right now. I'm going to trust in my spouse. I'm going to trust in my family. I'm going to trust in my parents. I'm going to trust in the drugs. I'm going to trust in the alcohol. Whatever it is, you're putting your faith in something. And a lot of times people live faithful to Jesus until it really hurts most, and then I'm going to find something else because I can't take the pain of, listen, waiting on the Lord to give me his promise. But this text, the Hebrew writer's telling them, no. Faith is a lifestyle. Faith is how you live. In other words, faith is how the Christians should roll. You know what I'm saying? Faith is how we should operate. Faith is how we move. Faith is how I walk. Faith is how I talk. I can't just say, today I'm going to have it, but tomorrow I'm going to find some other solution. No. I live by faith. And so though that's how the righteous live. And so if you're not living by faith, then it's fair to question, are you righteous? Because the righteous, we roll with faith. Amen? And so that's what the Hebrew writer starts with. And so here's the question that takes it a step deeper. He says, so whatever faith is, and we're going to get to it right now, but the Hebrew writer doesn't even tell you what faith is. He just says, whatever it is, that's what you live by. And so your ears begin to perk up because you go, oh, here's how you should live your life. And then he tells you what it is. What is it that makes faith great? And the Hebrew writer gives us this answer. He says, look at Hebrews 11, verse 1 now, as we enter into our text. Now, faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. And so, in other words, faith has to have substance. Okay? Faith has to have substance. In other words, when I say substance, I'm talking about faith has got to have some stuff, right? Some material, something that it can attach itself to, something that it can trust in, something it can rely on. Your faith has to have something it can live by, okay? And so let me tell you what this implies for us. Your faith is only as meaningful as the substance to which it's attached. Are you following me? Your faith is only as meaningful as the substance to which it's attached. And so if you've got great faith in a bad substance, then your faith will be insufficient because the substance that you're placing your faith in isn't reliable. And so Jesus talks about this very thing. You remember the story, Matthew 7, verses 24 through 29. He says, therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock, and the rains came down and the streams rose and the wind blew and beat against that house, but it did not fall. Right? But everyone who hears these words of mine but does not put them into practice is like the foolish man who built his house on the sand. And when the rains came down and the winds blew and beat against that house, it fell with a great crash. And he says, the same thing we're saying now. Jesus is saying, if you've got faith in a bad substance, then it doesn't matter how much faith you have. Your faith will be insufficient because the substance you're placing that faith in isn't reliable. This is a deep concept. In other words, he's saying, if you're feeling overwhelmed and you're feeling like you can't take one more thing, then your tower will come down if you have faith in a bad substance. Your worst nightmare will come true. And so you will lose the game, if you're, the game of life, right? Not Jenga, but the game of life if your faith isn't in a solid substance. So here's what this means. Are you ready for this? The greatness of your faith is not determined by how much faith you have. The greatness of your faith is determined by the quality of the substance that you're attaching your faith to. So here's what I came to tell you this morning. A lot of faith in insignificant substance produces little results. But a little faith in a significant substance will produce a lot of results for you. Do you believe it? That is powerful, and that is important for us. It reminded me of the illustration I used a long time ago that talks about the husband and the wife, and the man was a missionary, and he's going to go travel to another country. And so here he is, he's flying to this very remote country, and he's got to ride on this two-engine, little bitty, tiny plane. Right, it's one of those that's really kind of sketchy. You know, you're kind of scared when you get on it, and you're going, wow, this is tiny. And so his wife is like, No, you cannot go on this plane. You can't do this. You can't leave. You can't go. You can't go. And he said, honey, you just need a little bit more faith. And she said, sweetie, you just need a bigger plane. Yeah. Right? You see, her faith, she says, I don't need more faith. What she's saying is that I need a greater substance, right? I need a bigger plane. The object of her faith wasn't big enough for her to have great faith, right? She needed to increase the size of what she was placing her faith in. So give me a bigger plane and I'll have enough faith to eventually be able to say yes to something I'm saying no to now, because the substance wasn't great enough. And so if you want to grow your faith, and you told me already that you want great faith, what this means for us, what Jesus is telling you, is that it's not that you need to go faith hunting this morning. You don't need to accumulate more of it. You just need to make sure that you place it in a greater substance. You know, last night we went over to the Foshi's house. And we played some games with them. And we were there for like, you know, it was probably meant to be 3 hours. I don't know what they meant, but we chose not to leave for like, I don't know, 14 hours is what it felt like. We were there for a long time. And it was a lot of fun. We're playing different games. But we played a new game that we had never played before. Avery and I played it with them. And it was called Plunder. Now, in this game, we're all pirates. And we're capturing islands, and we're blowing up any enemy ships, and we're sailing across the treacherous seas, and we're looking for the infamous red X, which marks the spot, all in search of large amounts of booty, right? And that's how this game was to work. Now, in this game, there's several factors that come into play that I can't get into, but one of your main objectives was to collect as many resources as you could. Now, I tell you all of this because Avery may be the most notorious pirate in the state of Texas, okay? At one point, where she once was sitting, we all just kind of looked over there, and there was just a stack of resources, and underneath it, Avery was there somewhere. That's what it felt like. I mean, she was just hoarding all of this. She was just, man, and let me tell you, she's pretty greedy. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, she's just like, give it to me, all the gold, you know? And so she obviously wins by a landslide, right? And we won't even talk about Ryan's excursion, okay? That is a pretty pitiful pirate excursion. We got to play again and give you another chance, buddy. Avery stole all his resources. But greatness in the plunder game was determined by how many resources you get, but the greatness in life and the greatness in your faith is not determined by how much you can collect and how much you can get. And sometimes we're spinning on this wheel saying, if I could just get a little more faith, if I could just earn a little more faith, if I could just trust a little more, bit more, then this would happen. But that's not the way it works. A lot of times, it doesn't matter how much you got when you're putting it in something that's not worth anything. And you remember, there's that story in Scripture that I was reminded of where the disciples were trying to cast out demons. Remember that? And they couldn't do it. And they come back to Jesus and they say, hey, why couldn't we cast out these demons? And Jesus says, because you have so little faith. Now, that sounds like an amount word. So how much did they have? Well, Jesus says, if you would have only had faith the size of a mustard seed, then you could say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it would move. In other words, it doesn't take a lot of faith. It takes a greater substance. And when you have your faith, even if it's this much, placed in a substance that's big enough, then you can operate in places you thought not possible. Now, this is some good news, isn't it? So, the Hebrew writer is telling us in our text, he says, faith is not the amount, okay, but the substance of things hoped for, and the assurance of not the amount, but the substance of things you can't see. In other words, God is going to use your substance that you're placing your faith in is something you can't see. That's what makes it faith, right? If I could see it, hear it, smell it, taste it, or interact with it with my five senses, then it wouldn't be faith. Because it's all right here, right? So God, here's what this implies. And by the way, this is how God has worked from the beginning. You think about Genesis chapter 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And when God said, when God spoke a word, the power of just a word, he spoke and there was light. Right? He spoke and there was nature. He spoke a word. The utterance of one word from our God created all this stuff. And God took a bunch of stuff that you couldn't see, a bunch of material that you couldn't see, and used a power that you can't see to create a universe that you can see. And the same thing is how he's going to work in your situation. When you say, I can't take one more thing, God, I need you right now. God's going to use a bunch of things you can't see and a power that you can't see to produce an outcome that you can see, and your response will be, he's real. You see, that's what leads to faith. And so our God, through the power of the word, created the universe. And how big is your problem that you came in with this morning? Remind me of that, and I'll point you to a substance that's greater than any problem you walk through that door with. I'll point you to a substance who can speak a word to create a situation you can see out of stuff you can't. That's the power of our God. That's the kind of hope that these people need, because things are coming down. And so this is important, because when you understand what faith is, and we're starting to see it, when you understand what faith is, you also learn what faith is not. Does that make sense? I mean, this is a common concept of life. When you learn so much of what something is, you learn of what it's not. So in other words, you don't have to go around and tell your kids all about the horrible things of life. Right? If you teach them enough truth, then when they see untruth in their face, they'll say, I don't know what this is, but what I know is that this is not holy and this is not true. Right? You don't have to teach them every lie, because that would take you a lifetime. You just have to teach them one truth that is the truth. And that's enough, right? And so it's the same thing for faith. And so let me clarify what faith is not. Faith is not, listen to me, it's not necessarily, I'll put that word in, it's not necessarily how you feel. Because faith is in what I hope for, but I can't see it. Faith is not something that I can, it's not in something that I can see. That's what makes faith, right? And so feelings change based on the information received. And so when my eyes see something, when my ears hear something, my brain processes this, and my feelings follow the information received. And so if faith was based on what I put in, if faith was based on what I see and on the information received, then my faith would ever be fluctuating. But faith is not something that you feel in your heart. It's something that you believe in your head. It's a truth that you have believed in. Now, this is important because here's how you can know that I'm telling the truth right now. Have you ever known someone or been that person who feels faithless, but you look at them and you say, no, they're faithful. That's one of the most faithful people I know, but in themselves, I mean, this is one of the battles we ministers face, right, guys? Like, it's one of the most difficult things because we deal with people all the time who can't see in themselves what we can clearly see in them. And they come in and they say, I need more faith. And I'm going, no. If I could have the same kind of faith you have, the amount of faith you have, it would be just fine. Maybe you need to look at the substance a little bit more, right? But there's people who feel faithless, but they're full of faith. But there's a lot of people in your life, and you probably know some of these people who feel faithful, and you look at their life and you say, but they're faithless, right? And so faith is not an emotion, because emotions are changed based on our circumstances. But faith is a truth I understand, not an emotion I feel, which means consistency from my faith is grounded on a firm and unmoving foundation, which means even when my world is shifting around me, my faith can remain the same in the midst of it. And that's good news. And so when I feel like my world's going to come down, when I feel like I can't take one more thing, my faith can keep everything in place. And that's good news. And so this may be one of the most important series that you've ever heard, because here's what God says about faith. Look at verse 6 of Hebrews for a second. Without faith, it is highly difficult. Without faith, it is impossible to please God. It's impossible. So if you want to please God, then you have to have faith, because God can't be pleased in us when we don't trust in him, because when we operate without faith, you and I are challenging God's integrity. Let me put it on another level. Here's what I mean. When you and I choose not to live by faith, it's like we're calling God a liar. God's obvious. I mean, you wouldn't be pleased with people who call you a liar. And in the same way, God's not pleased with us when we operate without faith. And so then what is faith? Because I want to make sure that I've got it, because I want to be pleasing to God, right? Here's what faith is. Faith is acting like God is telling the truth. Okay? It's acting like God's telling the truth. It's not feeling that God is telling the truth. It's not saying that God is telling the truth, but it's acting like God is telling the truth, because that's why the Bible calls it walking by faith, right? One of our favorite passages. It's not feeling by faith. It's not seeing by faith. It's not understanding, reading. It's not even thinking by faith. It's walking by faith. In other words, if faith doesn't reach your feet, then it's not real faith. Faith moves you. Excuse me. Real faith moves you. Real faith propels you. And if I'm talking to some faithful people right now, then you know what I'm talking about, because you feel this stirring within you and you say, I can't sit here right now. That person needs me. This person came up and they don't have anything right now. And I've got a schedule and I've got a routine and I've got some things, but you know what? My faith is propelling me to put these less important, maybe more urgent, but less important things aside to focus on what's most important right now. Because I'm operating by faith, and real faith gets me moving. Real faith reaches my feet. Real faith is acting like God is telling the truth. And here's the most important part. Even when I feel like everything is falling apart, real faith still remains true and moves me to do what I can't on my own find the energy to do or the joy to do. You ever experienced that before? And then you look back and you say, how did I keep going? And the only explanation is faith. You see, real faith is, when I think of this, I think of the three Hebrew boys who said, you know what? We believe that God has the power to deliver us. And in fact, we think that's what he's going to do. But even if he doesn't, we're not going to bow down and we're not going to worship this idol because we have faith in God. You see, that's real faith. Real faith is like Habakkuk says at the end of his minor prophet, right? At the end in chapter 3, the last verses, some of my favorite, Habakkuk says, even though there's no fig on the tree, even though there's no grapes on the vine, and though the olive crop fails and the fields produce no food, and though there's no sheep in the pen or no cattle in the stalls, I will rejoice in the Lord. Because Habakkuk says, even though I can't see God right now, and even though I can't feel God right now, I will still rejoice because I believe in God, and I trust that he's telling the truth. Therefore, I can have joy in the midst of any circumstance. You see, that's the kind of faith that makes great faith right there. Let me give you an example of what this looks like as we're closing. I used to be one of the spiritual directors of a camp back in Louisiana when I lived there. It was called Camp Chioka. I think I've told you about this. Every summer, there would be hundreds of kids that would come through the camp. And what was amazing about it is it was a week where they would be unplugged. And for those who don't know what that means, it means you get your phone and you leave it behind. You're unplugged. No phones, no games, no electronics. It's just unplugged. Alan's done many of these with his youth group too. It's one of the most powerful things because it takes all distraction aside. And by the way, the opposite of worship's not sin. The opposite of worship is what? Distraction. And so we removed the distraction and gave them a week where all they are surrounded by is other Christians who have faith. And hopefully that will begin to impact them to improve their relationship with Jesus. And so that's what this camp was. And now those kids during their week, pretty much, if you were to ask a kid, what is your favorite time at camp? I wish it would be when Nathan was up speaking, but they wouldn't tell you that. I wish it would be when they had that awesome spiritual activity, but they probably wouldn't tell you that. Their favorite time was swim time at the Olympic-sized swimming pool that we had out at the camp. Not what you thought I was going to say, was it? Right? That was typically their favorite time. These kids would go crazy. Now, I was always so worried. They wanted us to throw them, to launch them, to wrestle with them. I mean, it turned into mayhem. Now, we had lifeguards, okay? Three of them posted each time. I mean, we had some things in place, and there were rules and all that. Okay, we weren't just letting them go crazy. But at the same time, them kids went crazy. I was always worried, okay, we're gonna lose one today, you know? And it was just the constant fear. But if you were to walk out in one of those particular sessions, you would see a kid named Barry jumping from the side of the pool into my arms in the deep end. And I would catch him. And then you would see him get out and run back and jump again. Now, you would see us do this over and over again. But let me rewind, because listen to me, that's not how the story always was. You see, Barry wanted to swim, but Barry had to wear one of those, we called them the red bracelets of shame. It was the only thing we could think of. We didn't want to shame any kids, but we needed to know who could swim and who couldn't. When you have all those kids in one big pool, you have to identify. And so we would make them wear a red bracelet, and they hated wearing it because it said, I can't swim, right? And so I've got to stay on this side of the pool. I've got to stay in the shallow end. And so Barry was one of the kids who couldn't swim. But what I saw in Barry, and by the way, I don't know fully his background, but what I know is he came from a very difficult living situation. A very difficult background. And I know some of, not all of, and the little I know is like, whoa, kind of stuff. And so here he is at this camp, and he wants, you can see it. Every day that I would go out with him, and he's standing in the shallow end, you could see it in Barry's eyes, that he wanted to jump in the pool like everybody else. And so he's watching a lot of kids jump off the diving board in the deep end, and he would just stand there in the shallow end, and he would just watch these kids do what he couldn't participate in. And he's seeing kids his own age, he's seeing kids older, they're jumping off the sides, and they're jumping off the diving board, they're jumping all in the pool. And Barry wants to do it, but Barry couldn't. And so one day I said, you know what? I'm going to do something for you, Barry. Come here, Barry, come here. And I picked him up, and I set him on the side of the pool. And we're at a place where it's still on the shallow side, but it's the deepest part of the shallow side. He cannot touch there. He's never been here before. And I said, all right, Barry, jump. I'll catch you. And Barry said, "No, no, 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 I can't swim." I said, I know you can't swim, Barry, but it's going to be okay. I'm going to catch you. Jump." He said, "No." I said, "Barry, come on, man, just jump." He said, "No, no, no, I can't swim." I said, "I know you can't swim, but I can swim. I've been swimming for a long time, and I'm here to catch you. Jump, Barry. I got you." "No." Okay, this went on for a very long time. It was this back and forth, but what I started to notice is each time, Barry would say, "No." Then he'd back up, and then he'd get a little bit closer. "No." And we repeat, repeat, and finally, he's pretty close, and his toes are starting to hang off the edge just a little bit, and I thought, okay, here we go. This is the one. This is the time. Barry's about to jump. And so again, now I'm saying it with a little bit more passion, and I go, "Okay, Barry, I'm going to catch you. Jump." And Barry said, "You're too far. Can you come a little closer?" And I said, "Man, you see, here's the thing. Here's the thing. Barry didn't trust my integrity. When I told him, 'I will catch you,' for whatever reason, maybe somebody left him, maybe someone abandoned him, maybe someone dropped him. I don't know his story, but for whatever reason, he did not believe that I either had the will or the ability to be able to do what I was telling him to do. And so I'm calling him again and again, and I'm saying, 'Barry, jump, Barry, jump. Barry, jump. Barry, I'll catch you. I'll catch you. I'll catch you,' right?" And have you ever felt God, the power of his word? We've already talked about that. Sometimes God's got to utter this word to you over and over again, right? "Come on, you can do this. I'll catch you. I'm there. I got you," over and over. And now, finally, Barry's up to the edge, but even still, he's not displaying the kind of faith that I want him to have. But there was something that happened when he asked me to draw nearer. He asked me, "Come a little closer." And you see, I said, "Okay." And so I come in even closer, and I lean in a little bit nearer. And here's what I knew, is that the closer I got to Barry, I knew the more confidence that he was going to have in me. And so finally I said, "Jump, Barry, I got you." And Barry, he did one of these. Into my arms, you know. It wasn't even a full jump. You were expecting a great finish, right? Like, woo! But no, 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 no. It's just, he kind of fell into my arms. But for Barry, that was amazing, right? It was the biggest splash that he had ever made. And so he's in my arms, and I go, "Barry, you okay? I told you I'd catch you. What'd you think, man?" And he said, "Listen, let's do it again." I said, "Okay." And so I take him to the side of the pool, and Barry climbs up, and then he comes back over. And then the next time I say, "Okay, Barry, jump, I'll catch you." And he kind of on one foot this time, you know, and kind of leans out and he jumps a little bit higher. And then he says, "Let's do it again." I said, "Okay." And so I said, and then the next time he jumps a little bit higher. And then the next time he jumps a little bit higher. Now, fast forward to the beginning of our story. If you were to walk out there, Barry is just jumping as high as he can off the side and as far out as he can. And a lot of times he would say, "Hey, scoot back, scoot back. You're too close, right? I can jump farther. I'll show you that I can jump farther." And Barry would begin to jump from the edge of the pool in places he never would have before, because he had faith in a substance that said, "I will catch you." And when he jumped, I was there to catch him. And he realized, Nathan's not going to let me fall. Nathan's not going to miss. Nathan's going to always be there. And then a lot of times Barry would start to, I would be turned and I'd be talking to somebody. I don't even have my arms out yet. And I'd hear Barry say, "Nathan, I'm going to jump. You better catch me," right? Like, and he's jumping before I'm even ready. Because here's the deal. When you find out that faith works, you will begin to invite the opportunity to have that kind of faith again and again and again. And you'll make it through something, and you'll look back and you'll talk with your spouse and you'll say, "How did we make it through?" And you'll go, "The only way was faith." And then the next time you'll say, "Here we go. It's another opportunity." And people will look at you and say, "You're crazy." And you'll say, "No, I'm faithful." That's good news, isn't it? You see, in order for Barry to achieve something that he thought was impossible, in order for him to achieve, here's our word, something great, he didn't have to have a lot of faith. Actually, the amount of faith he had to have was enough to just be able to kind of scoot him into my arms. But a little bit of faith in a significant substance produces a lot of results. And now he was jumping and swimming in a place he only dreamed that he could be. And if that's the way it works for a kid at a pool, how much greater will it work in your situation when you feel like the whole thing's coming down? Folks, if you're about to throw in the towel, my encouragement to you this morning, hang on just a little bit longer. God's got some promises that he wants to unveil for you, and he will catch you. He will not miss. I don't care if others have abandoned you or let you down. Our God will never leave you, and he will never forsake you. And because that's true, you can have faith in him. And when you place your faith in God, you're not just placing him in a significant substance. You're placing him in the greatest substance ever. You are placing him in something that is unmovable, something that cannot break, and something that will never change. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And so if you feel like your tower's about to crawl and crumble, I am encouraging you to come down and to put your faith in him this morning. The lesson's yours. Think about it. If you need to respond, you can do that now as together we stand and sing.